This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international programme of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
Hi, this is Garrett Wong. I played Ensign Harry Kim on Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. If that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello, everybody at home, and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host, Suzanne Williamson, and with me, as always, are...
Kay Shaw. And...
Zachary Fruling.
Today, we're going to be discussing Counselor Troy's appearances on Voyager, and we couldn't do that without a very special guest. Amy Nelson from Earl Grey. Welcome, Amy.
Hello, guys. I am so excited to be here with you guys on To The Journey. And Suzanne, I'm very honored. This is your first time back and just so happy to be here with all of you. This was very exciting.
Amy, have you lost yourself in Voyager?
Well, I did get to see some episodes that I'd never seen before, which I was shocked that I hadn't seen them before because they are Troy episodes. Come on now. She's my woman.
We had to tell you that Counselor Troy was even in Voyager, not just once, but three times.
It's terrible. It's terrible. I'm so focused on Next Gen. So I'm very, very glad to be here and to be expanding my horizons.
Well, we've had this kind of topic on the back burner for a while, and we definitely had in mind to ask you to come on. So I know that a little thing popped up on Twitter when you realized that she was in Voyager, and at that point I was like, right, we've got to get you on, we've got to do this topic. It's a good opportunity. So yeah, it's great to have you here.
Yes. Thank you for having me.
So, Amy, at the risk of asking an overly broad and general question, what do you think of Troy in Voyager?
Well, when I saw, and so there were three episodes that I watched, and when I initially, and I had this discussion on Twitter as well, like, I believe that Counselor Troy's position was there to counsel the captain. And I know this has been debated a couple times, so we're just going to talk about it now. Mm-hmm. Because she was on the bridge next to the captain, I felt her primary duty was to counsel the captain, not the rest of the crew. That came later. And then now watching this in Voyager, like, she's all about counseling the crew. But when I first was introduced to Counselor Troy at the beginning, and I thought her purpose was to counsel the captain, and that was her primary purpose. So what do you think about that? Do you agree with me or not?
I think her role was also to feel and sense and convey totally obvious reactions of everything around her.
Great joy and gratitude.
Great pain.
He's lying, Captain.
Despair. Loneliness.
Now, I'm only knowing that you are mocking her with love, because if
absolutely,
you weren't,
I love Troy,
absolutely,
then we would be having issues right now.
I absolutely love Troy. I'm a huge Troy fan, so I'm definitely with you on that one, Amy. I think it's really interesting what you say, actually, how you view that you see her as her role on the Enterprise is to counsel Picard. And I think if you look at it like that, it does put a very different slant on how everything pans out. And I probably never really thought about it in quite those terms until I'd heard you talk about it. So I think that's a really good point, actually.
It's been said that a counselor on the bridge of the Enterprise is one of the things that in the long term will date Star Trek The Next Generation to the 1980s.
What about having Wesley on the bridge? That won't date it.
Yeah.
Really, with the self-help movement in full onset in the 80s, you know, putting a counselor right there on the bridge, right literally next to the captain to help make decisions. That's amazing.
But we didn't really see her counsel him all that often.
Okay, I really have to disagree. It's very minor, and it's usually at the end of the episode where it's like, counselor, can I see you in my ready room? And that's really all that it is. So you have to imply that he is getting counseling from her and that he is telling her situations and things. And there's been multiple times where he's told her before telling anyone else. So I think that there is, you see it. It's not every episode. It's not going to be blatant, but it is there, and she is there for the captain.
I guess I just need the blatant in my face type thing for me to catch on. I'm a little dense sometimes.
No, but if you don't see it, then you miss it completely. And it's, you know, as I watch and I'm like, oh my gosh, he really is relying on her. Mm. And maybe that's me in my rose-colored glasses, you know, because I love Troy. And so I may tend to see or read more into it. But that's what I'm reading as I watch Next Gen.
Yeah, I always read into Dr. Crusher moments. Always.
Yeah.
We all love Troy, and if Marina were here with us, she would probably be the first one to poke fun at herself in those early seasons of The Next Generation.
Marina's awesome. I love her.
I know. I want to just go and hang out with her.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I met her for the first time last year, and she is just so fantastic. I don't think I've ever met somebody who just says exactly what she thinks all of the time.
All of the time. So yeah, my highlight, and I posted it on Facebook, was I had a student draw me a picture of Deanna Troi, and then I took it to Star Trek Las Vegas and had it signed. And so I got to talk to her, and she read, well, and I've said this on Earl Grey, but I'll say it again. So my student wrote this lovely letter on a note on the back, you know, and signed it and stuff. And I was like, here, Marina, will you please sign this? I had a student draw for me, and she turned it over and she read the whole thing. I mean, this thing was so long, and Marina had a conversation with me and told me about teachers that influenced her and thanked me for my service. And she is That's just awesome. So fun. Really love her personality, and seeing her on stage and how she interacts with everyone. I mean, she's a firecracker for sure.
Mm-hmm. I've always felt a little bit like having a counselor there for the captain to talk to is kind of a dramatically cheap way to gain access to what's going on inside the captain's mind. It's like, well, all this drama is happening, blah, blah, blah. Oh, let's go have a side conversation in the ready room so we can learn what's going on in the captain's mind. I feel like it's a little bit of lazy drama storytelling.
I hear
How
you.
How else would you find out about it?
I don't know.
Would he just go in there and talk to the fish?
Maybe he does.
That would be
well,
amazing.
Counselor Troy's not always around, right? When she's away from the Enterprise visiting Reginald Barkley, he's got to talk to someone. So he talks to the fish, absolutely.
Yeah. He's got a tiny little couch in his aquarium.
I've been having a tough day today, Livingston, and I just, there's no one else I can come to. You're my rock. You really are.
What if Q is actually Livingston, though?
Oh, I love it.
Scary thought. And also brilliant.
If Livingston were on Voyager, he would just be a hologram, like the holographic iguana in Lifeline. That was Lifeline.
Which has one of the best quotes from Counselor Troi, where she calls both Dr. Zimmerman and the doctor jerks.
Yes.
That cracks me up every time. I'm like, you're both just jerks.
Counselor Troy's gotten much less diplomatic in her later years. Yeah.
Yeah. See, I really like that line, and I really like that moment, and it's a great great Voyager moment, because it goes with a lot of the way that the Doctor does his comedy a lot of the time, and how we see that play out. It just fits really nicely with that. But it's interesting, because I've actually heard people say, oh, it was really unprofessional of her to say that as a counsellor. So I don't know what you guys think about that.
But everybody gets frustrated. Yeah. And she was just beyond frustrated at that moment, and bam, it came out.
Well, yeah. But there's a philosophy that you hit them with the truth. Mm. I mean, there comes mm-hmm. a time when, okay, yeah. she's tried this method. All right, now we're going to try the truth. You know, and all right, you're a jerk. Let's, you know, get on with it. So I think she tried multiple methods. I mean, it yeah. was a valid counseling technique.
You're saying that the hologram of Counselor Troy is programmed in multiple techniques. Is that what you're saying, Amy?
Oh,
wow.
Bow, bow.
Zach.
You have gone way off the rails there.
Are these those innuendos you keep talking about?
Yeah, a little bit. Oh, yeah.
What are you talking about? I was talking about counseling. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
So going on that with sort of Marina coming through her character more so, because yeah. I think you actually do see that, especially in Inside Man, when she's talking to the Dabo girl. Yes. And, okay, so I've seen Marina now 4 years at Star Trek Las Vegas, and so I'm sort of getting to know her character, like her, Marina versus Counselor Troy. And so when she's talking to the Dabo girl, and she's like, it was so perfect, because I've heard her say it in real life. She's like, I'm an empath. I can tell when you are lying. Like, the tone that she said that mm-hmm. was completely Marina, and I.
She's
just,
got like a yeah. jello-neck head bob thing going on in that scene. Like,
that's right, and that is totally Marina, and I love it when we get to see Marina, and we don't get to see that much Marina in Next Gen, unfortunately. Yeah. Well, yeah. Drunk Troy, she has said that you know she's Drunk Troy very well.
Drunk Troy is the best Troy.
But why is that? Do you think that the directors and producers kept such a rein on her where Marina, the person, didn't come through as much because everything was so tightly scripted? I mean, the cast of the Next Gen were so good at kind of just being silly offset and then, you know, being all business when the cameras rolled. Maybe that was part of it. Maybe they just, over the years, they all just became more comfortable and loosened up a bit. Kind of like we do as podcasters. I feel like I've loosened up a bit as a podcaster compared to 100 episodes ago. Right? So maybe that's part of it. But why is that? What, I mean,
well,
is it just an experience
thing? I have a thought, and it's completely mine. I won't say it's anyone else's, but I think back in the time you had Tasha Yar, and she was the masculine, feminine one, right? Mm-hmm. And so we needed to contrast that with Deanna Troi, who's the soft, warm, emotional. So she epitomized the femininity of the show. And to break away from that, you would have detracted from that feminine aspect. And so I think she was sort of put into a corner in that.
I've heard her describe it as when her character was conceived, she was the brains, and then very quickly she became the chick, in her own words, Marina's words.
Yeah. I don't know whether as well part of it isn't the fact that, obviously because she was somewhat older, whether as she's got older she's become more comfortable in speaking her mind and she's become more confident in putting herself out there more on the screen rather than just, you know, and I don't want to say like blindly doing what a director's telling her, because she's not doing that. You know, she's a great actress, and I don't want to put it that way. But maybe she feels more able to have free rein as she gets older and more experienced.
Well, and that there might be something to that, because like you will hear Patrick Stewart and Brent Spiner, like they will go to the writers and say, I don't think my character would do that. And I've never really heard her say that, especially in Next Gen, that she would advocate for a character like the others would do.
Yeah.
So maybe that was inexperience, you know.
Mm. Well, that, and if she said that too much, they might get rid of her.
There, and she was on the chopping block quite a few times.
Because they got rid of Gates, which broke my heart.
Yeah.
I think I remember reading that they threatened her to replace her with Jeri Ryan in one of the movies.
Yes.
And, and she said, that's the most ridiculous. Have you actually watched our show? That is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. They were going to put, Jerry Ryan 7 of 9.
Wow. In a Next Generation movie.
Yep.
I didn't know that.
That's in lieu of Counselor Troy. That's absurd.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is nutso.
I wonder as well whether or not there's an element when she appears in Voyager of the fact that in Next Gen, obviously the people who are writing the show, they know Troy quite well, but once she's in Voyager, maybe the Voyager writers don't know Troy as well as obviously she does, so they kind of let her go with the character a bit more rather than trying to pin her down. I wonder whether there's an element of that.
I like that thought.
Yeah.
But she does feel different. I think she feels more like the movie Troy in Voyager than she does in Next Gen.
Yes.
She is in the movies.
Can you tell me, because her uniform in Voyager, mm-hmm. obviously, is that from...
First Contact.
Oh, First Contact? Those are those? I thought it was the next one, Insurrection.
No, they have them in Insurrection, I think, but they do have them in First Contact. That's when they come out.
Okay, because it looked to me Insurrection, but maybe they're the same. I don't know. Okay.
It could be that they're slightly different, but I always thought it was the same uniform as they have in First Contact, which is then the one they get in DS9.
Okay, so I was glad to be onto the journey because I wanted to get more of a timeline because I didn't research it myself and I figured I would ask the experts. Oh. So Pathfinder, Lifeline,
came
and
to
Inside
the wrong
Man.
Place.
Wait, don't laugh at me. You guys are
no,
the
we're
experts.
Laughing at the fact that we have no clue. Carry
we're
on.
Experts?
Yeah.
Wow.
Carry
cool.
on. We can Google it and pretend we knew. That's what we usually do.
Okay, good.
We frugal it.
So with those, so Pathfinder and Lifeline, they're both season 6. And then season 7. Oh, wait, no. Which one is the one where she's on the beach and Barclay comes to her?
Inside Man.
That's
okay,
Inside
so that's
Man.
Inside Man. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so she's like, oh, well, Riker's going to join me in a week and so I can come with you. So is that after Nemesis?
No.
No, it's before.
So it's before, so then there's still something going on with Riker and Troy before the marriage.
I think it's after Insurrection
when
Counselor Troy and Riker rekindle their feelings for one another as a result of their rejuvenation.
Okay, so it is after Insurrection, but before Nemesis.
I believe so. I'd have to double check.
I think so. Yeah, I think it is. It certainly would make sense with the timeline as well.
Right. So, but then the season 6 was before Insurrection?
Gosh, now you're asking. I don't know.
Frugal it.
So Next Generation ended in 94, right? And that is when Generations came out.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, we got First Contact. That was 96. I believe I would have to have someone fact check me in real time here. I'll leave that to one of you guys. I believe that Insurrection came out in 98. And that would actually mean that this episode aired after Insurrection.
Yes. The 98, December of 98, though.
Right. And this episode would be after that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So all three of those episodes appear between Insurrection then and Nemesis.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
How's that for mental math?
That's awesome, Zach.
Amy, you're the math teacher of the bunch. How is that for the mental
math? Yeah, but I'm not the Voyager thing, so. So I found it interesting, like, the reasons that she, you know, was going to help Barclay was because... Oh, well, I think Captain Picard could let me, you know, go away. Or, oh, I'm going to meet Riker I'm sorry. I found those excuses so lame. So, so lame.
It's kind of like when Worf shows up in First Contact, right? When Worf shows up. The Defiant just happened to be flying by and Worf just happens to show up. And they just get it out of the way. They make up some lame excuse and they get out of the way. Okay, Worf is back. We don't really care why. It's a lame excuse. Same thing here. It's like, okay, Counselor Troy and Barclay, lame excuse, but get on with the episode.
At least they tried for an excuse. With Worf, there was no... All of a sudden, Worf is there. Why?
I was on my way to a conference and I stopped by.
I love your Worf. That's amazing.
Actually, this is a little bit of a tangent because that's what we do into the journey.
Tangent the journey.
Have you guys seen the Twitter account Worf Email? Worf's email? I think it's called.
No,
Worf
I've seen Ryan Googling.
No.
There are a bunch of emails, like Twitter blurbs, but they're emails from Worf, like from his little station, emailing people elsewhere on the Enterprise. It's hilarious.
I am looking this
up. But you have to read them in Worf's voice, and I will be happy to do that in real time if you'd like.
Oh, do
it. You can give me one to read.
Unless you can get Michael Dorn to do it, that'd be great.
I'll pull one up here.
Oh my gosh, that's... So it's called Worf's Emails?
I think so. Worf Email. Worf Email.
This is amazing.
Oh, there it is.
Okay, so I will find one and I will read one. Okay, ready? Here's one. Dr. Crusher. No, attaching lights to batoliths is not technically dishonorable, nor is using them in dance, but neither is advisable. Worf.
That's beautiful.
Oh my gosh, these are so funny.
Mother, what is going on in Russia? I'm hearing terrible things. Worf.
Wow.
They're very clever. Okay, I have one more for you guys. Captain, there is a strong possibility the Dominion may have hacked our email system. We must change all access codes today. Worf.
Well, going along with that, Geordi, I received a Starfleet password reset email. How can I tell if it is a phishing attempt? Worf.
No, do it, Amy, do it in your Worf voice. Come on.
Oh, I don't do Worf voice.
That was do amazing. One. I love that one.
Okay. <That's good>. Captain.
Do it.
Do
Captain,
it, do it, do it.
I know this is a sensitive topic, but I saw your report about the Four Lights incident, and I have questions. Can we meet?
That is awesome.
That's you will amazing. Never hear this on Earl Grey. Oh my gosh, what have you done?
That's going to be a little sub-show of Earl Grey every week now, isn't it? Reading out Worf emails.
The other one that I like is Riker Googling. Have you seen this one?
Yes.
Riker Googling.
Yes, I love Riker Googling.
Googling is awesome.
This one is way better.
Who can do a Riker voice now?
I can do one. You want me to do one?
Yep. Off you go.
You need to grow a beard really fast.
Let me find a PG-13 one, first of all.
Oh my gosh. Yes, I'm looking. Yeah.
There's some awesome ones. I love them.
Where is the on a Klingon? On a Vulcan.
Do Romulans all wear shoulder pads or do they have square shoulders?
They have square shoulders.
On that note, I would have liked to have had Riker shown up at the beach at the end with Troy.
Mm.
I wanted some Riker love on that show.
That would have, made the excuse more warranted. Like, okay, Riker's back. I'm going back, But it just, didn't happen. I wonder why.
It's cheaper to name drop.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot cheaper.
Well, you can accomplish basically the same thing, right? It's like, oh, Commander Riker. You get this Counselor Troy, Commander Riker shipper connotation. You don't have to pay anyone for it.
Okay, so why is it that swimsuits are so funny in the future?
I think clothing is just funny in the future, isn't it?
Like, okay, it's a swimsuit and it's this metallic. Like, why is everything metallic in the future?
Because the future is metallic.
Yeah.
Like the bed sheets in the next generation, right?
The bed sheets. Like, is that even comfortable?
Like,
no, it's not.
Oh, let me pull out my aluminum foil and make my bed.
Yeah,
that sounds comfortable.
Exactly. I mean, I saw that and I was like, well, that's a pretty cute. I mean, it's just your standard one piece and her cute. Oh, I'm thinking I might need to cosplay that at the next Star Trek Las Vegas pool party. Have that little wrap that's, tied in front. Uh-huh. And
That'll actually really help reinforce this idea that Counselor Troy is the brains as opposed to the chick.
Oh, yeah.
Suck.
You can be the chick and be the brains.
Yeah, you can be the chick with brains.
Thank you.
The two are not mutually exclusive.
Now, in the 21st century, back then, not so much.
You got Janeway, you got Seven, so that proves it right there. And B'Elanna.
Chic is totally a thing.
It's
amazing how much changed from the late 80s, early 90s to the late 90s when this happened, actually. I think the culture changed remarkably quickly.
So I wanted to point out, watching these three, one right after another, when in Pathfinder, I think it was, Troy was visiting Barclay and they were like, oh, we're friends, da-da-da-da-da. But then when at the beach scene, it was like, well, you can't see me in my swimsuit. And she sort of covers up and she's like, it's inappropriate to visit your therapist, on vacation. And I'm like, wait a minute. You just said in the previous episode that you guys were friends.
I love the Barclay's like, but they're after me, the Borg, the Romulans, someone is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get that. I do think that is a little bit weird. And I agree with you when he says, oh, I'm here for blah, blah, blah. And she's like, oh, yeah, well, why are you visiting your counselor at the beach? I was like, well, they are supposed to be friends, but I don't know, I think she's very good at drawing a line between this is a counselor conversation and this is a friend conversation. And I think because he's going there in a counselor capacity and asking for her help professionally.
Yeah, that's true.
When she's not professionally dressed.
She's not professionally dressed. So that's kind of how I see it. But yeah, it does jar a little bit. Yeah, I agree with
that. Only a little bit less than she was dressed for the first few seasons of The Next Generation.
Well, she had a lot of material on. It was just very tightly, you know, yeah.
I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah. I'm not saying I have a problem with it. I'm just saying it's not much of a stretch from what we saw in most of The Next Generation.
I don't know of anyone that has a problem with that.
So I know this is a Troy episode, but can we just talk about how Barkley, what an amazing actor he is? Mm-hmm. I mean, especially in, was it Inside Man, where he's the hologram? I mean, what's his actor name? Who is that?
Dwight Schultz.
Yes, Dwight Schultz. He is amazing. And I wish that we could have seen more of his acting ability, because he plays the doofus, the stumbling doofus, just perfectly.
Yeah.
And then we get to see him in Inside Man. And here he is taking control and, you know, leading the Voyager crew, which seemed a little gullible to me. But we can leave that neither.
Doing Captain Janeway impersonations.
But, you know, I mean, so he's playing this different part. And it's like, oh, my gosh, he's believable. I was very impressed with him.
He's got this incredible ability to combine inflection in his voice with radically over-exaggerated movements.
Oh,
you know, if he's nervous, he's playing with his hands and he's fidgety and he can't sit still. And then when he's confident, he's standing ultra tall. It's all very theatrical. Like when he's doing his Captain Janeway impersonation, he's got his hands on his hip. He's, you know, moving around like Captain Janeway.
Yeah, that was cocking so his head a certain funny. Way.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. But it's all this ultra heightened body movements.
Yeah, and it just adds so much to it with him being so physical. It's almost surprising when you see him play that more confident role, because you're so used to him as Barkley. You imagine that's how the guy is, and then you see how he just like flips into this other character, and it's like, wow, he's super talented actor.
Mm. Yeah. And another thing I noticed with these episodes, like so much red tape. And is it so true that in the future that Starfleet can't recognize an out-of-the-box idea, that they are going to shut down every creativity? I mean, it just seems like this is your big business, your government, you know, just suppressing every single idea because it doesn't fit this norm. And to me, that was a little sad and didn't seem very Star Trek-y to me.
It's odd because presumably in the 24th century, they don't have to worry about wasting taxpayer dollars, right? So what exactly is the issue?
Yeah, what's the harm in trying?
I agree with that, yeah. I love Pathfinder because there's just some really, really nice bits in that episode. But I think it doesn't really make sense why they wouldn't recognize that he's got this contribution to give, even though he's not necessarily conventional. For want of a better way of putting it, you'd think Starfleet as an organization would have learned to appreciate people who think outside the box. Absolutely. So they've done it to make the story work, and it's kind of a little bit of a leap.
Yeah, and because like in my classroom, like if I've got students, I'm trying to recognize their strengths, and so here Barkley is thinking outside of the box, being creative. And then here his boss is like, well, you didn't fill out these reports. Really? Seriously? You're going to make him and force him to fill out these reports when he could be solving and getting Voyager home? I mean, that just, it rubs me the wrong way, and I didn't like that, and I was just so surprised to see that in the 24th century.
But we know there are paper-pushing bureaucrats in the 23rd and 24th centuries. Kirk's always fighting the bureaucrats.
Yeah. I mean, I guess in a way, it's not that different from what we've come to see of like Starfleet headquarters, which I'm guessing is like where he's based, one of the buildings around Starfleet headquarters. And I think there's always been, with that back on Earth kind of set of people, there's always been a bit more of a, they're not quite as thinking on their feet because they're just in the office and they're not really facing emergencies on a day-to-day basis like they are out on the ships and stuff. And they don't have to think quite as creatively, so I kind of think maybe there's some of that, but
Can you picture like the Star Trek version of The Office, like they're walking around, they're plotting, there's a little banter, oh, got to do our TPS reports, and then it's like, oh man, the replicator's out, no coffee this morning? Oh my God.
So we can get rid of money and hunger and disease, but we can't get rid of bureaucrats?
No. They're staying forever.
It's the universal constant. Yeah, the one constant
it's
in
bureaucrats
the universe.
And cockroaches. They'll be there forever.
Paper-pushing bureaucrats.
That'll be it. At the end of all things, it'll just be cockroaches swarming over a big pile of paper. That'll be it.
What I like, though, I like that Pathfinder, and Kay, you and I talked about this when we did our Pathfinder commentary recently. I like that episode shows kind of an ordinary boss-employee relationship, right? We tend to think of our commanders in Starfleet as the commander. It's very much a command relationship. But here we see a much more kind of informal boss-employee relationship between Barclay and whatever the name of his boss is that I can't remember. It's more like a supervisor, in quotes, than a commanding officer. Right.
You need to take a week's vacation.
It's like, oh, come on home and have dinner with the family, Barclay. We'll hook you up with our sister-in-law. Right.
Chick.
Yeah.
I just like in Pathfinder, we get to see Chakotay and Leather again.
Yeah, we mentioned that for you when we did our commentary, especially.
Thank you.
That was nice. And I had to think, I'm like, what's going on with Chakotay? But then I figured it out.
I'll take any excuse I can get to see Chakotay in the leather again.
What do you guys think of the way Counselor Troy counsels, for lack of a better word, the Doctor and Lewis Zimmerman in Lifeline? She has to mediate. She has to bring them together, have a trust fall moment with them.
Yes, she does, right? Well, that's where... Okay, recap the episode for me just real fast.
I can't do that. I have no memory. Who's good at that?
So to begin with, after Barclay has tried to persuade them to talk to each other, he brings Troy in. And she tries sort of conventional counselling stuff on them to start with, doesn't work. Then she tries to get them to see it from each other's point of view. So she's sort of saying, oh, right, how would you feel if you were in this similar situation? How would you feel? And they seem like they've sort of got to a bit of an understanding, and then that doesn't work. And then she calls them jerks, and then they mess with the Doctor's program to get them to reconcile.
Right. I love that she says to Zimmerman, she basically says, what if you were the relic from the past and some super souped up holographic engineer from the future were the one who were wrong and you were 100% correct that you were right and you could save their life? How would you feel, Zimmerman?
Yeah.
The EMH Mark 12. There is no Mark 12.
Well, imagine there is.
Yeah, I think she was good to... Yeah, try and find that common ground. Like, we'll look at it in this situation. She did that with both of them.
Yeah, it didn't really work in the end, but that's not her fault. That's them more than anything, because, well, he's created him in his own image, hasn't he? And they are just
exactly
as stubborn as each other.
I love that Zimmerman created his own little holographic animal friends.
Yeah, that was weird.
Apparently you can't get a real iguana in the backwater, you know, space stations out there. You've got to have a holographic one. So,
well, you don't have to remember to feed them.
You feed them the holographic flies.
I figured they were like his projects when he'd been learning to do his holography, and he just liked them, so he kept them around.
It's possible I just didn't watch the episode carefully enough. That is a holographic fly, right, buzzing around?
Yeah. Yes.
Right, okay. Yes. I was make sure that wasn't just me projecting that. Pardon the pun.
Ba-da-ba-da.
So do you think that there really is an issue with holographic addiction? Because now you have not only Barclay, but now the Doctor living in this, creating characters that he's interacting with. Mm. I mean, his nursemaid, you know? So it sort of runs parallel with Barclay.
I'm sad, really, that we didn't hear more about the idea of holo addiction, because I think it's a very real possibility in the future. You know, I mean, you can create whatever scenario you want. You can
alternatively
stay in there.
It could be an outlet for your vices.
Well, and I don't know if you listened to Primitive Culture. They did one a couple months ago, and yeah, but is it an outlet or are you going to become addicted and want to live there? Mm. You know, there's fine lines.
Definitely. You would think, like with with Barclay on the Enterprise, where we see him going through his holo addiction, you'd think that there would be more like of a regulation whereby they don't let it happen in the first place, like monitoring how much time people are spending in there and what programs they're running and all that type of thing. Not necessarily monitoring it and like somebody looking through it all, but there being Big flags brother. In the computer to say this person's spending way too much time in the holodeck.
But in all fairness, we're drawing a kind of artificial distinction where the lines have already been blurred between reality, what's real and what's fake, mm-hmm. right? Characters like the Doctor or the holographic lab assistant inside Lifeline, or pick your favorite, you know, even a sentient android like Data, right? They blur the line between mm-hmm. what's real and what's artificial. So it's not a matter of hiding from reality being in the holodeck, because the lines between what's real and what's not are already so blurred when you have sentient intelligent beings or artificial beings.
Mm. Yeah, that is true.
Like the doctor has feelings and he means things to certain people. The holographic lab assistant, you know, means something to Lewis Zimmerman. So it's not a matter of like hiding from reality, because as Counselor Troy points out, those feelings are real.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're in the holodeck interacting only with holographic people and not engaging with, in inverted commas, your real life or the situation that you're actually physically in, you know, where the holodeck is, and that, I think that's different. But I do get what you're saying about the doctor's assistant in his lab, because she's a real person to him like anybody else.
But let's say the holographic doctor, the doctor, go, not Zimmerman, Dr. Zimmerman, but the doctor. Let's say the doctor and holographic Barclay go play golf in the holodeck, like the doctor proposes, right? Is that hiding from reality? No, that's just something the doctor does for fun, right? There's no, that's not inherently hiding from reality, because you like to do stuff and...
And whereas if you hang out with the goddess of empathy on the holodeck,
that's
the line right there.
Barclay's feelings for the goddess of empathy are real, Suzanne. Come on.
That's true. He does see her as real. Yeah.
Oh, that whole thing is so wrong.
Oh, yes.
So I guess it's just too easy to oversimplify this issue of holodeck. Look how addicted we all are to our devices and our... you know, our artificial forms of entertainment. And is that real or fake? Is that escapism? No, it just becomes part of our reality. It's the new reality. It's not fake. It's just how we roll these days.
Well, I think they don't highlight it more. I think in part because, like, the 24th century, that's where everyone's supposed to be bettering themselves mm-hmm. because they want to. Yeah. And living in a holodeck is not bettering yourself.
I think that it is an issue, especially like with Barclay, because like you say, you know, while he's in the holodeck, he's not trying to work towards improving himself or anything else that's going on around him. He's just in there indulging in something.
No, that's not true, because Barclay is being what he thinks of as the best version of himself, the confident version. It's not just addiction for him. It's allowing him to be himself.
Yeah, it is. But then how is he actually contributing?
Right. And does he translate that into his real life?
No.
Little by little, though. In the long term, he totally does.
Really? When? Where?
Compared to when we first see him in The Next Generation compared to in Voyager?
He has a big girlfriend. Difference.
He has a girlfriend.
That was paid. It was a hooker.
Yeah, but you know, he actually went there. He never would have gone there in Next Gen.
It's baby steps for Barclay.
Yeah.
Okay, well, in Next Gen, he had that when the powers and he got really smart and confident. Mm. Like, that changed him a little bit, but it didn't really manifest. Like, I don't know. I see it more as an addiction and not that it's he's trying to improve himself.
Oh, yeah. See, I think of it as, I don't know if it's trying to improve himself, but I think of it as the one place where he feels like he can be himself, right? He can picture himself being confident and hanging out and playing catch with the Voyager crew yeah. and being one of the guys. And that's not who he is, but that's who he wants to be. It's how he views himself, how he wishes he could be. And that's where he gets to be that person. I don't think he's trying to better himself. I think it's more like that's where he feels authentic.
So is that healthy?
No, I don't think so, because he's obviously not translating that into his real life. So the time he's spending in the holodeck doing that is him escaping from the fact that he's not able to do that in reality.
Right, it's fake.
And then obviously, like, with Deanna's help, gradually we see he doesn't suddenly become like this super confident person, but I do see a bit, I do see a change in him towards like his last episode in Voyager. You know, he's going to go on a double date with Riker and Troy.
with the real teacher. Yeah.
She was a teacher. I knew you'd pick up on that, Amy. When I was watching it, I was thinking Amy's going to be like, oh, she was a teacher.
Yeah. Let us know how that date with Barkley goes, Amy. holographic Amy. He's just gonna
yes.
go out with holographic Amy, not real Amy. You. The goddess of math.
So one thing I did want to ask you about, Amy, was how, like, when Troy and Barkley first show up in Pathfinder, I found it really interesting that they'd obviously got this really close friendship that they built up. And I thought that said a lot about her as a person, because after everything that they went through previously, she could have been ended up being very much like, oh gosh, keep this guy away from me. I don't want him anywhere near me. He's a creep. But she isn't. And I think that says a lot about how she is as a person. So I wanted to see what you thought about that.
Yeah, I think definitely as you especially study human nature and different types of people, and you can forgive and excuse more aberrant behavior than just your normal person because you've actually studied it.
Yeah.
And I see that a lot more with my students. Like, I can forgive so much more because I know my students are a little off, or, you know, on the spectrum, or, you know, so it's not that I, you know, in my immaturity, I would have been like, oh my gosh, who is this kid? Get them away from me.
Yeah.
But now it's, you know, you welcome them, and you can see that graduation. Well, not even with her, but she definitely accepts Barkley and recognizes who he is, and recognizes his strengths and his attributes, you know, and then excuses the others that you just sort of have to do within that job.
I think that's so important. I think as a society, I feel like that's something we've actually got much worse at. We yes. don't give people the benefit of the doubt. We don't assume that people have good intentions. And Counselor Troy, after seeing the Goddess of Empathy thing, would have every reason for assuming yeah. he does not have good intentions.
Restraining she, order.
She yeah. chooses the most charitable interpretation of, of what she saw in the holodeck there. And that's important. Like, it's just assuming that other people, even when they act weird or do bad stuff or whatever, have good intentions.
Yeah.
And most people are inherently good people. And really do mean well, you know, that's such a good starting point to have. And I feel like as a society, we're terrible at that now.
Yeah.
Agreed. But it takes a lot of learning and knowledge and understanding to get there. And sometimes I think that people aren't willing to put in that time and effort to understand human behavior or understand and get to know that person. They would just rather jump to generalizations and stereotypes.
Because somebody doesn't necessarily behave exactly in the way that you expect, that means that you instantly write them off rather than right. trying to figure out who they are and how their mind works, because it's just different to yours.
Yeah, as an individual.
Yeah, well, that's kind of how I see Star Trek a lot of the time. You know, I feel like people are much more respected for the individual that they are, and you don't see labels being put on people so much, I think, in the future we're presented within Star Trek. And I think labels can be very useful in people kind of figuring out their identity, but definitely see people more just respected for, well, that's this person, rather than trying to put them all into boxes. They're just individuals and who they are.
Kay, are you saying that the goddess of math knows all about the problem of induction and does not overly generalize?
Yes.
Oh my Zach. Gosh, Zach. I yeah, love it.
Welcome to what we have to deal with.
She loves it. She's going to be moving in. It's fine. We've got a big ready room. Bigger than yours.
Yes.
Yeah, plenty of room over here.
Touché. Oh my gosh, so funny. So, Kay, I hear what you're saying, but then in the back of my mind, I'm like, to me, sometimes I wish that Star Trek, when you get this alien, like, it's so one-dimensional. And so I hear what you're saying, and I think that they try and do that within Starfleet, but then, like, when it's aliens, it's like, oh, you're logical. You're a Vulcan. Well, is every single Vulcan logical? I don't know. We saw, you know, an Enterprise and, you know, it's not going to be this one type that is so common. And that's, I am looking forward to Discovery and reading the books and the comics, because they are going to explore this Klingon culture so that it's not all honor and glory and, you know, So I do hear what you're saying, and I definitely recognize it, but I'm looking forward to see what they can do more in Discovery to push that, because you can't judge an entire race and just say these are the qualities that every single person has. So I like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But oftentimes in Star Trek, what they're doing, though, I mean, we're on a bit of a tangent here, but what they're doing is taking the best or worst parts of our own human nature, oversimplifying them, heightening them, exaggerating them, and making an alien race out of them.
Yes.
That's a commentary on us.
Exactly.
So you could say it's overly general, even racist, right? Oh, all the Klingons or whatever, right? But really, it's like, no, they're saying all the humans are like that here in the real world.
Yeah, I do accept that, and I do get that. But we've seen previously with other races that, you know, they're not all the same. They're presented as this, oh, well, Ferengi are all about profit, and they're only interested in that, and they effectively worship money, you know. And then we see Rom and Nog, and they have different priorities in Deep Space Nine. They, you know, Nog wants to go off to Starfleet Academy. He wants to do something completely different. Rom's not really interested in the money side of things as much as a lot of the other Ferengi are. He wants to, you know, get a different job. He wants to be an engineer. He's interested in that, and he wants to pursue that instead. So I think the more we see a race, the more we see that kind of pan out. But I do get what you're saying, Amy. A lot of the time it is like Vulcans are logical, Klingons are warriors, and Ferengi love money. And
Amy, not all half betazoids love chocolate.
Hashtag just not that all one. Half betazoids.
Yes. And what is Barclay serving ice cream and then allowing the cat to lick it?
I know.
Exactly. I was not happy with that.
Is replicated chocolate not toxic to animals? Is that what it is?
Oh, maybe.
Maybe not. Maybe
I
not.
Wasn't even worried about that. I was worried that Troy wasn't getting her chocolate.
I love that.
I was worried about Neelix.
Amy's worried about Troy. Suzanne's worried about the cat. I love it.
Neelix is going to have to take a little trip to the litter box after that.
Yes.
I'm not scooping that.
Well, these episodes are so interesting, but Troy only features in a few scenes in these episodes. I was kind of surprised. I remember Troy being there a lot more than she actually was. You know, she had a handful of scenes, and they're great scenes, but these aren't like Troy episodes. They're Barclay episodes.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was watching Lifeline, and I'm like, did they give me the wrong episode to watch? Because she didn't come in till like the way end of the second half.
I was like, actually watching it and thinking, Amy's going to be like, why did you not tell me she's only in the second half? And I didn't have to watch the whole thing.
It's like that episode of Enterprise when all of a sudden it's like they're in a different time zone and there are airplanes and Nazis everywhere. It's like, here's Counselor Troy at the very end. What happened?
Whoa, Counselor Troy.
Well, yeah. And I was watching it and then they're like, well, the doctor doesn't need this. They need a counselor. And I'm like, aha, Counselor Troy's coming.
Quickly,
way to announce it.
Wheel her in.
Yes.
But I think she does feel like she's in them more than she actually is.
Definitely.
I remember, I think her role in Voyager that she has for those three episodes, I think she's more in Pathfinder and a bit less in the other two. But I feel like she's memorable, very memorable in there. Definitely.
I agree. I think it definitely extends her character, and I love seeing her in Voyager, of course. But yeah, she's playing a different part. You can see different writers are writing her, and she has this different role where it's just one-on-one, where with Next Gen, it was the captain and the whole crew that she had to worry about, where here it's just, okay, I have to worry about Barclay and make sure that you're, you know, where you need to be mentally and stuff like that. So it's definitely a different look, and I like seeing that expanded look on her character.
I don't remember Marina and Dwight having a particularly great on-screen rapport in The Next Generation. I mean, there were interesting episodes. We had the Goddess of Empathy thing, but I don't remember them being quite so much of a great on-screen match together. And they really do make a great little duo for three episodes.
You are right. I mean, the times that she's counseling him on the Enterprise D, it's not as organic as it is on Voyager. You are correct. Yeah. In my opinion.
So the actors must have clued into the fact that they work well together at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've no idea whether they'd work together anywhere else other than on Star Trek. I don't know. if they knew each other outside of Star Trek, but I do agree, when they were together in Next Gen, it was a lot more formal. It felt a lot more formal.
Well, and it could be a scenario of those two came from Next Gen, so they were both in a strange, not strange, but, you know, in a different environment, so they sort of...
brought the party back.
Yeah, they had a instant bond because they were Next Gen and then coming into this different environment.
Yeah, sure.
So they had that natural bond.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
What it almost makes it comical, like we're going to put our little Counselor Troy and Reginald Barkley shticks back on and, you know, ham it up for an hour or so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder why they did that. Were they trying to get the Next Gen viewers or...
I don't know. I think they wanted, when they decided, because I obviously, Amy, you've only seen like those three episodes in isolation, but obviously they've got this ongoing Pathfinder project where they're trying to get Voyager back. And I think when they had the idea to do that, I think at that point they probably wanted to bring in characters that we already knew to say, well, they're going to be back on Earth, back in the Alpha Quadrant, trying to get work towards getting Voyager home. So it made sense in a lot of ways to have characters that we've seen before.
Also, Voyager is like the spirit child of the Next Generation, right? Mm. Deep Space Nine went in a totally different direction,
yeah.
Different tone, different feel, different way of thinking about story development. And then Voyager was like, oh, we're back exploring space. It's highly episodic. So they were really trying to recapture that Next Generation audience after the Next Generation ended.
Mm. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it's like a comfortable, delicious bowl of ice cream for the Next Generation fans. Chocolate ice cream.
Yes. Yeah. Swirl the fudge around. Yeah.
Yes, this is the swirling the fudge
around. Spoon it around the rim. Don't forget to spoon it around the rim.
That's right. And then close your eyes.
What does that even mean?
You have to watch her do it, Zach. It's like an artist at work.
Oh,
yes. You have
yes.
to relish every bite or whatever
yes.
the phrase she uses. Yeah.
I wonder how many takes it took to do that.
Probably quite a few, knowing what the TNG crew were like. I'd like to see some outtakes of that scene. I really would. I bet Jonathan Frakes was just trying to make her laugh.
Yeah.
Chocolate is a serious thing.
So I think what we got of Troy was great, but I kind of feel like I would have liked to have seen more of that, because what I would have really liked to see is... You don't really get to see this so much, Amy, unless you've actually gone on to watch the rest of the Voyager. And I don't know how much of the rest of it you've seen. But once they've got this sort of set up, the Pathfinder side of things, they actually get to have face-to-face contact with home. So they actually get to talk to people. It's for a very short period of time each month. I think it's like 18 minutes or something. I can't remember. But they have a rota of like who gets to talk home and stuff. And I wondered whether or not it would have been interesting, given the fact that there's a lack of a council on board Voyager, and it's been talked about a lot of times how a lot of the crew really were in need of having somebody there to do that, and they didn't have somebody for that role. Whether it would have been interesting to see Troy counselling our Voyager crew, I would have really liked to see that.
It's much more interesting to see people have their neuroses on screen than be cured of their neuroses on screen.
Right. Yeah, but I think I would have really liked to have got into like Janeway's head more. I would have liked to see Janeway and Troy. That would have been so...
dealing with her depression.
So interesting, because Janeway doesn't seem to me like the kind of person that opens up very naturally. And seeing how Troy would have handled that and tried to sort of delve into that, I would have just found that really fascinating.
Right. So like in the episode Night, when Captain Janeway essentially locks herself in her quarters to sulk because she's regretting all of her
past decisions.
I like
the way you say sulk. She's depressed, Zach.
She sulks.
Severely depressed.
She's seriously depressed. Can we be upfront about, like, mental illness? She's not sulking.
Commander Chakotay tries to, like, bust her out of it. Like, let's go play a game of Velocity together. And she's like, no, I'm going to sit here and sulk. What would Counselor Troy have done in that situation? If instead of Chakotay, take Chakotay out of the picture. Now Counselor Troy is going to the captain's quarters to try to lift her spirits, cheer her up.
She'd have been like, well, how would you feel if you were Chakotay asking you to come and play Velocity and you said no? I don't know, because I'm not a professional counsellor, but, you know, I would have liked to have seen how that would have worked out.
I think Captain Janeway is too proud to have a counselor. I think it wouldn't have worked one bit, and Captain Janeway was going to sulk in her quarters.
She tried to use Leonardo da Vinci as a counselor.
But that's my point. She's not going to do it to a real person. She's going to go in and hide in the holodeck.
So she's the one with holo addiction.
The whole of Voyager has holo addiction. It's probably just best not talked about.
No, I'm serious. Captain Janeway is too proud to really open up with her crew in that way. Even to Chakotay, you know, a little bit. She opens up, basically kind of says, I'm regretting my decisions and it's my fault and I'm just going to hide in my quarters. She kind of tells him what's going on. But she's not going to go in search of counseling to try to be better. She's going to work through it herself. That's how.
She gets ordered to speak to a counselor, she's not going to say no because she's like,
can you
staff?
Can you imagine Captain Janeway getting
No.
Can you imagine Captain Janeway being ordered to talk to a counselor? How ridiculous of a conversation with a counselor that would be. She would not go for it one bit.
Well, I think it depends on the counselor because if Troy. And I think Troy has proven herself to Captain Picard that I think Captain Picard also is too proud to say, oh, yeah, I need help.
Very similar that way. Yeah.
Yeah. But she has proven herself. And I think as any good counselor would, that you inspire people to talk to you and to trust you because you, A, keep things, you know, in between you and that you give good advice and that you ask good questions. You know, so whoever that counselor is, they would have to be top notch. It couldn't be some, you know, freshman out of the college, I'm ready to go. Like, it's got to be this top notch counselor to be dealing with the likes of Picard and Janeway.
And Troy is the best.
She is.
Well, okay, but in Voyager, Chakotay kind of serves that role. And Tuvok, to a large degree, especially early on in Voyager, serves that role for Captain Janeway. Someone she can open up to, someone she trusts. More like a friendship, less like a counselor relationship. Captain Picard does that with counselorship. Can you imagine Captain Picard kind of opening up to Riker that way? Opening up to the first officer, like, well, let's go have a cry
fest. Yeah, but as we've discussed before, Janeway and Chakotay's relationship is very different from Picard and Riker's relationship. Let's just leave that there.
No midnight sales.
No midnight sales. But I really would have liked to have seen that. I would have loved to have seen Troy, especially if Janeway was really resistant to it. I think I would have liked to see how Troy worked to break through that. I think she'd have been great.
Oh, it would be really interesting. Yeah. But she would have to break through it. It wouldn't be like, oh, let's go have a counseling session, Captain. Yeah. Oh, okay, counselor. Right, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm not saying she'd be like, oh, hurrah, a counselor, and I'm going to just completely pour my heart out of everything I've been bottling up for the last 7 years. But, you know, Troy would have to work at it.
Would the fact that she stood up Riker come up in conversation at any point during that?
Oh, I don't know whether Amy knows about that.
Say what?
Yeah, Riker asked Janeway out when they were in the academy together. And she just sort of stood him up.
I did not know this.
Taylor's Mosaic book.
Mosaic.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So it would be interesting if that came up.
Their relationship is so open, it's totally fine.
Yeah. They're great. I love Troy and Riker. I just want to say that for the record. I think they're fab.
I like Troy and Riker, and I like Troy and Worf. I'm not going to lie. I like them both.
Really?
Yes, I do.
You're one of those?
Yes.
I just didn't see it. I don't know.
I'm gonna fall back on my trusty. I'm glad somebody does.
I liked the sort of sister-in-law kind of relationship they were kind of formulating when she was going to kind of look over Alexander, and they weren't like coupled, but she was kind of part of the family and she was going to help out with Alexander in some way. Like, that kind of made sense. They had a friendship. I get that.
Yeah, but that's what brings them together, that whole budding. And it's like, yeah, I'm going to be the mother, you know, quote unquote. And yeah, this aunt type of thing. But then Worf starts relying on her more, like, you know, going to her and obviously a good counselor. But, you know, then it gets more personal. And to me, it's very natural. It's organic. They've known each other all these years. And it just totally makes sense. Completely parallels, solidified it. And then best of both worlds, like just that hint of what's going on. I love Troy and Worf together.
But, Amy, Counselor Troy is not going to fight holodeck monsters with Worf.
It's because she doesn't want to. She could.
In your headcanon.
We're on to headcanon now. Well, in my headcanon, when they will get home, when Voyager gets home, Troy is part of the kind of group of people that they have there to help them readjust to getting back to Earth. That's in my headcanon. That's been in my headcanon for quite a long time.
That's in a lot of fanfic too.
With her being somewhat involved with, I know she's not directly involved with Pathfinder, but she's indirectly involved with it because she's been with Barclay throughout it. To me, that's just natural and makes sense.
Oh, yeah, that makes perfect sense. That's all right. It's in my headcanon now.
Hey.
In my only semi-serious headcanon, when Voyager gets back to Earth, they miss being lost in the Delta Quadrant with each other as a family so much that they all join Barclay in Holodeck Voyager and just get lost in Voyager all over again.
Stop getting them lost again, yeah. Zach.
That's their home. They think their home is Earth. They're home together on Voyager.
But that's why they need a counselor to make exactly. that transition. Because, yeah, you're right. That experience is going to be life-changing. You're going to have those relationships that you know and love, but they're not going to be the same. And all things change. That's the one constant yeah. is change in mm-hmm. the universe. Mm-hmm. And so making that transition from we had to rely on each other to now, oh, maybe I'll casually see you at Voyager reunions, you know?
Yeah.
I think you and we as humans go through that. Like some people really love their high school experience and that's where you are for 4 years. And
yeah.
and then, but then you graduate and then you're moving on mm-hmm. and you miss those, but those times will never be taken away from you.
Yeah.
So when we get around to having our Trek FM podcaster reunion meeting in 20 or 30 years, like who's bringing the snacks and who's going to do the fundraising and who's doing ticket sales and who's going to sit at the desk and
who's paying for my flight,
give people the
I'm
going to
be organizing it all.
I got the Romulan ale.
Hey,
there you go. See, you all just need to come to Star Trek Las Vegas and then we won't have this issue anymore.
That's only because you live Zach. In Las Vegas and it's the easiest way for you to see people because they come to you.
That's right. I know.
But you hit on something. There's when things change, there's a sense of loss, right? Mm-hmm. And that is hard to adjust to. You can ignore it. You can dwell on it. And reality is probably somewhere in the middle. But there's a loss associated with the ending of The Next Generation. And that's why it's fun to see these characters again. Yeah. When Voyager gets back to Earth, there's a loss, presumably associated with not being with your friends on the ship anymore. And life is like that. It's just a big series of transitions. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it definitely feel like they would need some fairly hardcore counseling there to help them to transition.
Or they could just get over it and go speed racing in the Delta Flyer. You know, it's like have a midlife crisis and buy a Porsche.
Well,
right? You don't have to deal
Zachary,
with it.
If you would read the books like we keep badgering you to do, you would find out what happens next.
Tom is not going to go to a counselor. Tom is going to like build another hot rod ship and go cruise around the solar system.
Yeah, that's what happens.
Read the books.
Read them.
So, Amy, we've watched these episodes a bunch of times and you have seen them recently for the first time. And so you've allowed us to re-experience these vicariously through you for the first time. What was it like to see these episodes for the first time? In the way of final thoughts as we wrap up here, what do you think? Send us away with some inspirational words about counseling.
Inspirational words. Oh, dear. Pressure's on. Well, I really enjoyed seeing Barclay and Troy again, obviously, and in this different universe, literally. I liked seeing Troy's character more of a counseling Barclay, where again, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, that in my opinion, I thought she was there to counsel Captain Picard, and how she does it so well. She's so patient and she really gets to the issue and uses her empathic abilities, but doesn't rely on them. And I think that that's really is shown in these episodes, I think a little bit more than in TNG. I think she does rely on her empathic abilities. And when she loses them, like in The Lost, like it's really evident. But here, I think she has a good balance between her counseling and then relying on her empathic abilities. I love the interplay, as you pointed out, between her and Barclay. It's very organic, very natural, very, it's a very good thing. So it was very exciting to see. And I think in these episodes, the Voyager crew, they are a little different too. Well, one of them, that's the holodeck, right? And then the other one, they're like following Barclay around with all of his, you know, oh, you're so good. And so I think the Voyager crew, it might not be the best for the Voyager crew, but for Troy and Barclay, I think these are really good episodes. And I think it really does get that sense of, oh my gosh, they're getting close to getting home. And so coming back, I think that really sets the tone.
Yeah.
I don't know why they're so pessimistic about Voyager getting home. They're only like, you know, after starting out 70,000 light years away, they're only like 25,000 light years away or something at this point. They're making pretty good time.
They are, but, you know, they've had a lot of almost getting homes over the years. None of them ever worked out.
Oh.
But yeah, I totally agree with everything that you've said, Amy. I think they're great in there. I'm really glad that they put them in. I think it fits nicely with the Pathfinder project and the fact that we're getting closer to home, that we're seeing characters that we're familiar with, and it's sort of bringing it all together, because we don't see as much of home on Voyager, and I've said this quite a few times before on To the Journey, but because we don't see a lot of the familiar stuff because we're so far away, it's nice when we do get those little bits in there. So I really appreciate that.
Suzanne? Did you like seeing Troy?
Oh, I love seeing Voyager. Troy.
Yeah?
It was great. I really wish she could have interacted with the Voyager crew instead of just Reg, but I don't always get what I want, as everyone knows. Janeway Chakotay forever.
Although I do beg to differ with you a little bit, Amy. Counselor Troy wasn't just cast to counselor Captain Picard. Someone had to eat all the chocolate on the ship.
Yes.
So
was there an overabundance of chocolate stored there or something?
In the 24th century, there's an unlimited supply of chocolate. The code name when they were developing replicators was actually Wonka Vision.
So. Thank you, Mike TV. So, Amy, for those that don't have the empathic abilities to communicate with you, where can they find you to talk more about Troy?
Well, you can find me here on the network. I co-host Earl Grey with Richard Marquez and Justin Ozer, and that is our network's dedicated podcast of The Next Generation, which is why I love Next Gen. And you can also find me co-hosting On the Edge, the new podcast for Discovery. And I do a little mini show called Postcards from the Edge, where we talk about fan response for each episode. You can find me on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson. But my favorite place is to hang out in the Babel Conference. And so you can talk to me all day there and send me empathic feelings and emotions there.
You can also find Amy in the holodeck if you want to talk math with the goddess of math. Or at least her likeness.
Yeah. Yes. Thank you so much for having me on To the Journey. I really, really appreciate it. You guys are so fun, and I love talking Counselor Troy. So thank you so much for thinking of me for this.
We really don't shy away from the ridiculousness over here.
Thanks for coming on. It's been fun.
Thank you so much for coming on. Like I said at the beginning, you know, we couldn't do this without you. We couldn't have talked about Troy without you. You would never have forgiven us, and I don't think the listeners would either.
Right.
It was great timing because, you know, To the Journey is not known for having guests. You know, it tends to just be like it was Char and Tristan, and they had very few guests for 190 episodes, and we've done a couple, but, you know, we've tried to kind of keep the same model. So it was just great timing, too.
It's even more of an honor then, so thank you so much.
Well, it's been fun getting my podcasting legs back and talking about Counselor Troy today. But this isn't the only thing we've been discussing on the network. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
So yeah, I didn't have anything except I like the ogre being like really down to earth. Like, hey, yeah, I'm Justin.
Hey, nice how's it going,
you.
Man?
Yeah, how's it going? Yeah, because you expect me to go like, I'm an ogre, donkey, or whatever.
But no, I love that because, especially since my husband and I have a D&D group, and so I was looking at that and going, oh, ogres. That is just so cute. I wonder what his armor class is.
Melodic Trex.
I really like the two Fairhaven episodes that we got. I know a lot of people are either very hot on these episodes or very cold on them. They've never bothered me. I think they're a lot of fun. And they're silly, but whatever. But one of the things that's really cool about them is we get something different in the musical field for Star Trek, with this wonderful Irish-style music.
Earl Grey.
Well, I just noticed mine deals with all naked people.
Richard!
What? Wow! All right.
Wait a minute. Oh, Justice Tappich, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
I just noticed that. I was like, oh.
There's nudity in each of those episodes.
Well then.
TVMA.
Warp 5.
It was a weekly thing. It was originally on Tuesdays. At some point, Trip decided to make it a nightly thing. Or at least that was his idea, but then it went back to a weekly thing. I'm like, that sounds just like my life, because this is the type of thing where it's like, yeah, you get together every Tuesday, and then you gotta wait a whole week, and at some point you're like, we should be doing this every day.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link as well.
Well, as always, we love to hear your thoughts on our episodes, and there are lots of different ways for you to send them to us. The best place to join in the larger conversation is in the Babel Conference, which is our listeners group on Facebook. If you search Babel in the search field, that's B-A-B-E-L, it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. If you choose message to a Trek FM show, pick to the journey and that will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at Trek FM and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Suzanne, when you're not double dating with Riker and Troy, where can our listeners find you?
You can find me on Twitter. My handle is KJaneWay8. You can also find me on the Babel Conference, popping up here and there and every now and again. Zachary, when you're not shopping for your shiny bathing suit of the future, where can folks find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of Metatrex, Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy, along with my co-host over there, Mike Morrison. You can find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me over there. And you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G. And Kay, when you're not stalking Counselor Troy on the beach, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
I have to say I do like the beach, so it seems legit that I would be there stalking Counselor Troy. You've distracted me now. I don't even know what my contact information is, to be honest, Zach. You can find me on Twitter. My handle there is Choco Weeble, and you can also always find me in the Babel Conference. I'm hanging out in there quite a bit.
Well, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, we invite you to become a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and many more, all available through our special patrons website, The Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of time and money to produce, host, and distribute these podcasts each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, as always, we have some people that we'd like to thank. C. Brian Jones, our founder and publisher, and the king of empathy. Our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp. Aaron Harvey, our art director. Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shea Matala, our Patreon manager. And of course, as always, we want to give a really big shout out to our associate producers, Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you so very much for your support of Trek FM and of To The Journey.
So join us next week as we delve into the hazards of feeding your cat replicated chocolate ice cream. Until then, this has been To the Journey.